of Lamech and his hurt. Meanwhile Leah's sons and those of the maids sat, all ten, behind the hill at the bottom of the valley, round a burnt-out fire where they had cooked their morning mess. They stared into the ashes. They had all risen betimes from their striped tents set up at some distance in the shrubbery, had risen singly, but all very early, some even before dawn, for their sleep had relished them little. They had got, in fact, but little refreshment from it since they had left Hebron. Indeed, they had exchanged the pastures of Shechem for the vale of Dothan, out of no other than the desolate hope that it might refresh them better elsewhere. They had gone grumbling to the well, stumbling with stiff joints over the matted and twisted roots of gorse. It was a well of fresh water near the place where the flocks were scattered over the field, for the well close at hand was dry at this time of year. They had drunk, washed themselves, and prayed, looked after the lambs, and then assembled at the eating-place in the shade of a group of red-trunked branching pines. The view from here took in the level country, dotted with single trees and shrubbery, the hill with the village of Dothan on top, the distant flocks of sheep, and the low mountains in the background. The sun was already well up. The air was full of scents of sun-warmed grass, of fennel, thyme, and other field odors beloved of sheep. The sons of Jacob sat in a circle upon their haunches, in their midst the dying brushwood fire with the pot atop. They had long since finished eating and sat there idle and red-eyed, their bodies sated, but their souls gnawed by a hunger and dry thirst to which they could not have given a name, but which spoiled their sleep and made their food like ashes to them. A thorn was in their flesh, in the flesh of each one. It could not be pulled out. It festered, tortured, and consumed. They felt slack, and most of them had headache. When they tried to clench their fists, they could not. These men, who once to do vengeance for Dinah had bathed Shechem in blood, asked themselves if they were the men for like deeds today. And they answered, no, they were no longer those men. The gnawing worm of their grievance, the festering thorn, the hunger in their inwards, unnerved and unmanned them. Simeon and Levi, that savage pair, suffered especially from their shameful state. One of them poked dully with his crook in the dying embers. The other, Simeon, swaying his body to and fro, began a half-muttered sing-song, in which some of the rest joined one after another. It was an ancient ditty, a fragment of some half-forgotten ballad or epic from times far remote. And Lamech the hero took unto him two wives. The name of the one was Ada, and the name of the other was Zillah. Ada and Zillah, hear my voice. Ye wives of Lamech, hearken unto my speech. For I have slain a man to my wounding, and a young man to my hurt. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech seven and seventyfold. That was all they knew. It was without beginning or ending, so they stopped there. Yet hung on the sound as it died away, seeing in their mind's eye Lamech the hero, how he came up armed and glowing with pride from his deed, and told his women, as they bowed before him, how that he had washen his heart clean. They saw the young man laid low and lying in the blood-stained grass, the almost guiltless sin-offering for Lamech's frantically sensitive honor. The plain word, man, was softened to the tenderer, young man, in the next line, and in the sacredness of his suffering and death might well have roused emotions of pity, at least in the hearts of Ada and Zillah, being women. Even so, they could only have enhanced their adoration of Lamech's implacable and incorrigible virility and unquenchable thirst for revenge, these being the ringing theme of the ancient saga. Lamech, he was called, said Leah's Levi, thrusting his charred stick into the fire till it broke. Does it please you all? I ask that because it pleaseth me well and even very well. That was a man, a blade, a lion heart, a fellow of the ancient mold. There are no more of his like. He lives only in a song, which we sing to refresh ourselves with thoughts of the past. with his heart washed clean, he might come before his wives. And if he visited his strength upon them, one after the other, then they knew what manner of man they received, and trembled with desire. Dost thou come so before Shua's daughter, Judah, or thou, Dan, before the Moabitess? Tell me, what has become of the breed since then, that it begets only the prudent and pious, but no true men? Reuben answered him, I will tell thee what takest man's revenge out of his hand, and bringeth it about that we are grown unlike to Lamech the hero. It is twofold, Babel's law and the jealousy of God, both of which say, Vengeance is mine. For revenge must be taken from the man, otherwise it breeds furiously on, rank as the swamp, and the world is full of blood. For what was Lamech's end? Thou dost not know, for the song telleth it not. But the youth whom he slew had a son, or a brother, who struck Lamech down, that the earth received his blood likewise. Then one out of Lamech's loins slew Lamech's murderer out of revenge, and thus it went on, until neither of Lamech's seed nor of the seed of the slain youth was there any left, but the earth might close its maw, for it was sated. But it is not good so. It is a weedy growth of revenge, and groweth by no rule. Hence it was, when Cain slew Abel, God set his mark upon him, that he belonged to him, and spoke, Whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. But Babel decreed that man should humble himself to judgment for blood guilt, and not revel in revenge. Thereto Gad, son of Zilpah, in all his directness, Yea, so speakest thou, Reuben, with thy thin voice which cometh out of thy mighty body, and however often one heareth it, one is surprised. Had I thy limbs, I would not speak like thee, and defend the revolution of time and its changes, which unman heroes, and breed no more lion hearts in the world. Where is the pride of thy body, that thou speakest with thin voice, and will put thy vengeance into God's hands, or submit it to judgment? Shamest not thou thyself before Lamech, who spake, This is a thing between three, between me, and him who offended me, and the earth. Cain said to Abel, Will God console me when Noemah, our sweet sister, taketh thy gifts and smileth upon thee? Or will the judgment decide to whom she belongeth, thee or me? I am the firstborn, and so is she mine. Thou art her twin, so is she thine. That God decideth not, nor the judgment of Nimrod. Let us go out upon the field that we may decide it. And they decided it together. And as I sit here, named Gadiel, whom Zilpah bore upon Leah's lap, I am for Cain. And I, for my part, said Jehudah, would no more be the young lion, as I am called of the people, if I were not for Cain, and still more for Lamech. He thought well of himself, on my word, and thought not meanly of his pride. Seven times, quoth he, Bah, I am Lamech. Seven and 70 times will I be avenged, and there lieth he, the lout, for the sake of my hurt. What sort of hurt may that have been? Asked Issachar, the bony ass. And wherein may the pitiful youth have fallen under the mighty Lamech's displeasure, that he left it neither to God nor to Nimrod to avenge, but took vengeance abundantly with his own hand? That no man now knoweth, responded his half-brother Naphtali, Bilhah's son. The nature of the youth's insolence is unknown, and what it was which Lamech washed off in his blood, that is lost to the world's memory. Still, I have it from hearsay that men in our time swallow shame much more loathsome than that which Lamech suffered. They swallow it, the craven creatures, so we hear, and go away elsewhither, and sit them down, and in their belly the shame fermenteth and consumeth, that they care neither to eat nor to sleep. And if Lamech, whom they admire, should see them, he would give them a kick behind, for they are worth no more. He spoke with glib and spitefully fluent tongue, and his face was distorted. The twins groaned and tried to clench their fists, but could not. Zebulun said, There were Ada and Zillah, the wives of Lamech, and Ada is to blame, as I shall show you. For she bore Jabal, the father of such as dwell in tents, and of such as have cattle, the ancestor of Abram, of Yitzhak, and Jacob, our gentle father. Therefrom have we our trouble and our destruction, and are no more men, as thou sayest, brother Levi, but cautious and pious, and as though castrate with the sickle, which may God forbid. Yes, were we huntsmen, or even seafarers, all would be changed. But with Jabal, Adah's son, came love of tents into the world, the shepherd nature, and Abram's dreams of God, and all that hath weakened us, so that we tremble to do our worthy father a hurt, and big Reuben saith, Vengeance belongeth unto God. But can one rely by means of abominable dreams upon God and upon his justice, when he is a party in the strife, and himself instills arrogance into the good-for-nothing youth? For what can we do against the dreams, he cried out, his voice cracking in his anguish, if they are from God, and it is ordained that we should bow? But something we might do against the dreamer of the dreams, shrieked Gad, likewise with heaving chest. And Asher added, so that the dreams were without a master, and no longer knew how to come true. That, replied Reuben, would likewise have meant setting oneself against God. For it were all one to set oneself against the dreamer or against God, provided the dreams were from him. He spoke in the past tense, saying not would mean, but would have meant, in token that the question was solved. It was Dan who spoke after him. He said, Hearken, brethren, and give heed to my words, for Dan is called Snake and Adder, and on account of a certain subtlety he availeth as judge. It is surely true, and Reuben is right. If we punish the dreamer, so that the dreams become masterless and powerless, we thereby expose ourselves to the wrath of the self-willed, and invoke upon us the vengeance of the unjust. There is no gainsaying it. But so, saith Dan, we must run the risk, for there is naught imaginable that could be worse or even as bad as the fulfilling of the dream. For in any case, self-will will have lost, let it rage and storm as it will, and the dream shall seek their dreamer in vain. We must act, for only the accomplished deed instructeth. Hath not Jacob too suffered this and that for his deceitfulness, and found Laban's service no matter for laughter on account of Esau's bitter tears? Yet he hath endured, for he carried off the main advantage, that is, the blessing. It was put aside and in safety, and no god, whoever he was, could have done aught against him however much he would. One must endure tears and revenge for the sake of the good, for what is put aside and in safety, that cometh not again. Here his speech, which had begun so subtly, began to wander. But Reuben answered, and it was strange to see that man, strong like a tree in strength, turn pale and white. Thou hast spoken, Dan, and mayest now be silent. For we have gone thence and departed from the father's hearth, and our annoyance is afar from us and in safety, and in safety we sit at Dothan 5 days distant. And all that is an accomplished deed. And then, after all these speeches, they let their heads droop low, almost between their knees, which stood up high as they squatted on their haunches, and there they crouched round the ashes of their fire, like 10 sheaves of misery. Joseph is thrown into the pit. Now it happened that Asher, Zilpah's son, with curiosity unquenched even by affliction, peered out over his knees so that his eyes roved across the plain. And afar off in the morning light he saw something glitter like a flash of silver, which disappeared and came again, sometimes in a single flash, sometimes two or more close together. Asher jogged his brother Gad as they sat next each other, pointed out the will-o'-the-wisp, and asked him what it meant. They shaded their eyes to look, and gestured their surprise. The others saw and heard, and those who sat with their backs to the plain turned round to gaze, following the direction of Asher's eyes, until at last all the brothers had lifted their heads and peered out together at a shimmering figure which was moving toward them. One cometh, all shining, Judah spoke. But after they had waited a while for the figure to come nearer, Dan answered, "It is not a man. It is a boy." And with one accord their sunburnt faces all went ashen as Reuben's had done a little time before, and their hearts beat with a wild and rapid rhythm like drums, so that a hollow, concerted drumming noise arose in the breathless stillness. Joseph came on across the plain directly toward them, in his coat of many colors, and his garland resting on his veiled head. They did not believe it. They sat with their thumbs in their cheeks, fingers before their mouths, elbows on their knees, and stared out over their fists with starting eyes at the approaching illusion. They hoped they were dreaming, yet feared to find it so. Some of them, even in a confusion of fear and hope, refused to believe their eyes when the oncoming figure smiled and spoke, and there was no more doubt.